Welcome to Through a Common Lens, a podcast to prepare for UMKC's HLC accreditation site visit. This is Alexis Petrie. I have 5 episodes planned and will release one each week up until the site visit. This is episode 1, titled, Well, Run It. This episode features Chris Wolf, manager of UMKC Bookstores and author of A Pearl of Great Value, The History of UMKC, Kansas City's University. In this episode, Chris tells us about UMKC's history as it pertains to accreditation. You will hear many familiar names from buildings to scholarships, and be able to connect them with our university story. Chris also discusses how Kansas City University came to join the University of Missouri system and dispels a few myths. Welcome, Chris. Chris, what can you tell us about UMKC's first attempt at accreditation?
Well, our first attempt at accreditation failed in 1937. There was conflict between our original administrator, whose name was Ernest Newcomb, and the first president of the university named Duncan Spaeth. Ernest Newcomb had originally been the executive secretary for the Board of Trustees, and he was responsible for putting together all the curriculum for the school, for hiring all the professors, for remodeling the Dickey Mansion into the administration building. That was all put in his hands. He was paid very, very little for this, but he did it out of his love for the university that had developed, all the hard work he'd put into it. And Mr. Volker helped him and his family, of course. And so when the university started in 1933, everybody suspected that the trustees were just going to name him as the president, and they didn't. They didn't give him any defined powers. They just said, run it.
Who were the trustees? Did they have much experience with an endeavor like a college or a university?
These were all businessmen from Kansas City, engineers and lawyers and doctors and, manufacturers, and they didn't know anything about higher education. Mr. Volker didn't know anything about higher education. They all leaned on Ernest Newcomb and said, well, run it. Well, he didn't have any defined powers, and so he had experience. He had been the administrator of a Methodist women's college called Central College in Lexington. So he had experience, but he didn't really have, written backing from the trustees. And so at the end of the first year, he just arbitrarily fired 3 professors. And this caused an outrage amongst the students. There was no due process. This is unfair. You didn't even, tell them they weren't, up to standards. You just fired them. And so it caused a protest, which embarrassed the university. And so the university decided, well, we need to have a formal president. And so instead of naming Ernest Newcomb president, they said, well, we need an academic. So they hired a Shakespearean scholar named Duncan Spaeth from Princeton University to be the president. And Duncan Spaeth had poor health. His wife is in poor health. And it took him a year to get here. So we went through 1934, 1935 with this uneasy relationship with Ernest Newcomb as the de facto president without any official authority. When Duncan Spaeth got here, he was named president of the university. But Ernest Newcomb was still the executive secretary of the university and the Board of Trustees with no defined powers. And so it was just a ripe environment for the conflict between these two men. And so when it came time for accreditation, they came and interviewed us, and everybody said, these two are at each other's throats, and it's an unhealthy relationship, and it's a mess. And so the accreditors went back to the trustees and said, hey, this is what we discovered. You need to clean your house up before we can give you accreditation. And so they ended up firing Duncan Spaeth. And on his way out, Duncan Spaeth said, well, you should consider hiring Clarence Decker, who's chair of the English department, to replace me. Now, Decker was very wily. He, to some degree, was working behind the scenes already, getting various trustees on his side. And in December of 37, the trustees approached Dr. Decker and said, would you, step in and take over the university? And he said yes. Ernest Newcomb was snubbed again. He was very upset. He went to the chair of the Board of Trustees, a man named Ernest Howard. And Ernest Howard said, when is the last time you took a vacation? He said, here. Wrote him a check for a few $100 and said, take your family on a vacation, cool off, come back, we'll figure this out. So Ernest takes a vacation, comes back early January of 1938, and finds his desk in the hallway. And so he saw the writing on the wall that there was no place for him anymore. And so he left the university and would never return. Well, so 1938, Clarence Decker becomes president of the University of Kansas City. Our administration is in more, stable hands. And so the accreditors are invited back that fall and we're given accreditation.
Well, I'm glad we eventually got accredited. I have here a letter from the North Central Association of Colleges and Secondary Schools. It's addressed to President Clarence E. Decker, and the letter reads, "My dear President Decker, the Board of Review has voted unanimously to accredit the University of Kansas City as a member of the North Central Association of Colleges and Secondary Schools. We believe that your institution is in a strategic position to render a large educational service to the area in which it is located. Yours very truly, A.J. Brumbaugh." Part 2. Problems with Dr. Decker's vision. There's a Newcomb Hall, but there's nothing for Dr. Decker.
There is nothing for Dr. Decker.
So why is that?
So Dr. Decker had a vision of the university that it was an elite liberal arts college.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of college he went to. He went to Carleton College in Minnesota, to this day an elite liberal arts school. And he, there's always the debate, is a college education supposed to build the character of a citizen or is it supposed to be job training? Well, Dr. Decker firmly came down on the side that it is supposed to build the character of a citizen. And that's what a liberal arts education did for him, and he believed that was the main mission of the university. However, over the years that he was president here, the university grew beyond that vision by leaps and bounds. We merged with the Kansas City School of Law in 1938, the Western Dental College in 1942, and the Kansas City School of Pharmacy in 1943. So we were adding professional schools and becoming a comprehensive university, whether he liked it or not. And he was not shy about expressing his opinions that those professional schools were secondary in importance. They were job training, vocational education. And what really our mission was teaching the liberal arts and building scholars and character, character for citizens. And, students wanted the university to grow. We wanted intercollegiate athletics. We wanted to compete against other schools in baseball and basketball. And they wanted national fraternities to come to the university. We viewed ourselves as being on par with KU or MU.
Mm-hmm.
Those were our closest universities. And our students thought, we're every bit as good as those universities. And what are we lacking? Athletics and fraternities and sororities. And so they would go to Dr. Decker and they'd say, hey, we want this. And he'd say, okay, I'll consider it. And then never would consider it. In 1953, this all kind of came to a head. He had four visit administrators, including his provost, all resigned one day. And they went to the trustees. They turned in their letters of resignation and said, we're resigning from our positions because we believe that Dr. Decker's vision is the biggest impediment to this university's growth. the faculties of the professional schools backed these administrators. And one of those administrators, actually the provost, was Norman Royal, who also has a building named after him. He went back to becoming a math and physics professor after he was provost. And the faculty of the professional schools backed these administrators because they believed the same thing. They didn't get any support from the university. They were left to manage themselves, raise their own money. There was no comprehensive strategy as a university that included them. In fact, when the School of Pharmacy was first merged in 1943, Dr. Decker tried to make pharmacy a department of the College of Arts and Sciences. And the alumni of the pharmacy school here in Kansas City was up in arms. And they're like, no way you're going to give them less status than the School of Dentistry. And
wow.
So they demanded that they be made a unit, a school just like dentistry or law. The trustees had relied on Dr. Decker to run the university for 13, 14 years. These men didn't know anything about higher education. And so they just relied on Dr. Decker and knew what he told them.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of this was just out of left field for them. And so they backed Dr. Decker. And when this first started, he offered to resign. And they said, no, you fix it. Well, in that spring of 1953, it really came to a head when these administrators resigned and the faculties of the professional schools were in revolt and they all voted no confidence in him. The students, hearing all this, got together to decide what to do. And they gathered in the university playhouse and heard two competing sides. President of the student body came up and said, well, we just need a cooling off period. You know, we don't want to be hasty. One of the men of the Bounders fraternity got up and said, those administrators were right. Dr. Decker is holding us back. He's been promising us athletics. He's been promising us fraternities. He's been promising us enrollment growth, that we'd be a bigger university, and it hasn't happened. And so the students voted no confidence in him. So the next day, he resigned. Now, his replacement was a man named Earl McGrath, who had been the Commissioner of Education for the United States, which today is the Secretary of the Department of Education. So he was the highest ranking educational official in the U.S. government. He was a friend of one of the Board of Trustees members named David Beale, who was the chairman of a bank here in Kansas City. So David Beale invited him to come to Kansas City. He liked what he saw here at the university. He accepted the job. That summer, before he could start, the chairman of the Board of Trustees, whose name was Ernest Howard, who was the original man who had hired Clarence Decker way back in the day, he passed away. And David Beals became chair of the trustees. And so now the university had completely new leadership, new head of the trustees, new president. So they had the, backing to do whatever they wanted, basically. And so what Earl McGrath wanted to do was change our mission from a liberal arts focus to a comprehensive, urban-serving university. To that end, he established the School of Business and Public Administration and the School of Education to serve that new mission. And then, of course, he brought in athletics and eventually fraternities and sororities.
Great. Wow. What a history. Please continue on to episode one, part B, where Chris Wolf continues telling us the history of UMKC.